Nation here on Scrawl. Right? Yep. Nope. We're just gonna pretend none of those 5 seconds were real.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember how good the beginning of the show went?
Yeah, and you remember how Rima didn't mess up any of the soundboard? Totally.
Right, and I possess the ability to speak normally, too. So
all those things.
I was at dinner last night with my boyfriend, and like three different times I tried to start saying things and messed up. And I'm like, did I have a small stroke, maybe?
Possibly. We also were talking earlier about the possibility of Rima doing an entire Scrawl show in Arabic, because I'm sure all of Scrawl Nation would really appreciate that.
I legit would be real excited about it. Yeah. I wouldn't understand any of it, but I'd be like, how neat.
You'd be like, oh, totally, me too. Word of the day in Arabic.
That's literally why people go to Roman Mass or whatever.
Right.
Is it Latin Mass?
Yeah,
that's Roman. True.
They go because they don't understand, but it's neat. It's
right.
Fun. It's fascinating. Also, speaking of, my mother is listening to Scrawl Radio for the first time ever.
Shout out to Sally.
We're having a date night tonight. We're going to see the Book of Mormon.
So cute.
So just She's wanted to town? Say hi. She's in town visiting me. So,
Welcome back.
Welcome back to Scrawl Radio.
Yeah, this is Scrawl Radio on Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection. My name is Brandon. I'm here with my co-host, Rima, and we have a guest, Ryan, in the studio today, who is an Aquablur and is a leadership experience through some internship stuff that he did last year, and just also just being a good natural leader also, of course. And also quick note about how good that Lauryn Hill song was.
Oh, 100%. Because she's the leader of everything.
Larger note about how good Lauryn Hill is.
Larger.
Just overall.
That's a very, very important thing for us to
listen.
So talented.
Kids who don't get it. If you have not listened to the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill album,
buy it.
You should.
Immediately.
Like, get on iTunes.
Best use of your money.
During finals week, me and my one of my best friends sat in an empty classroom, which I really like to do on finals week, just find an empty room somewhere. We had a 90s ladies hip hop night.
why weren't we invited?
Literally my wheelhouse. Go on.
we turned on the projector and the radio or the TV, whatever it is, in the classroom. So we had loud speakers going in the whole thing. And we did Crazy Sexy Cool.
I'm so mad at you for not inviting us that I'm about to leave the show.
Crazy Sexy Cool, Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, and then we did Aaliyah's first album.
We're keeping you for forever. I'm so proud. I just tears, really.
Goodness.
Tears.
Legit, so honest to God, my musical wheelhouse is exactly
it's
that.
The best. It's the best. And it's frustrating because we look at how good women's R&B and hip hop was in the 90s.
Yes.
And now we have Iggy Azalea.
That's a thing. You know, did you know that TLC is coming to Chicago next month?
I'm very excited. Yeah, because Brandon's going to go see them.
Yeah,
that was the transition
to
remind.
That was my sly way of saying that I am indeed seeing.
I did not know they would still perform.
How would you perform just the two of you?
Well, they're just going to have me do Left Eye's parts. So
I do know everyone.
I'd pay a lot of money to see that.
Yeah, so. But it's TLC, Nelly, and New Kids on the Block.
What?
Ryan is
Where are they playing?
At Allstate Arena in Rosemont.
Oh, wow. They're still big enough for Allstate. Yeah, Nelly is big enough for Allstate.
Nelly.
Absolutely. Are you serious?
Nelly got arrested for possession of meth and marijuana. I was like, do not let this. Yeah, right?
Wow. He's
from Missouri, so I mean. But I say that as a Missourian, everyone. Anyway, let's talk about leadership.
So, I mean, obviously we should all respect Ryan as the leader based on his awesome taste in music.
Yes.
That's what makes a good leader.
That's the end of the
episode
show, guys.
Over.
Bye.
Have a good week. See you next week.
No, but on the real, Ryan, I said on the real for the second time in this episode.
I mean, I like it. I think we should keep it.
Done.
Okay.
But you were an intern last year through the EDGE program, which we have done an episode about recently.
So
about
all you Scrawl Nation listeners know what the EDGE program is.
But you worked with the Student Leadership Institute last year here on campus. So you got some good experience in looking into, you know, leadership-y things. So based on your experience, what do you think makes a good leader?
Well, I think that the first thing I consider is what SLI teaches, the Student Leadership Institute, just SLI for short, and that's socially responsible leadership, which is an interesting take on leadership. It's kind of, to me, it got so ingrained in my head that it's now what I think of when I think of a leader. but it's something, it's kind of a concept that seems weird to some people. I have there's five traits of a socially responsible leader that I wanted to go through the list and kind of give my takeaway from it.
Please do.
So the first one, self-understanding and personal integrity. Number two, taking seriously the perspective of others. Three, contributing to a larger community. Four, knowledge and intellectual competence. And five, striving for excellence. And so I think my biggest takeaway is what's not on that list. And mm-hmm. you don't hear loud, you don't hear charismatic, it's not outgoing, extrovert, these kind of traits that we normally in our heads assign to great leaders.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's not what SLI teaches, and that's not what I learned there, and that's not really how I view leadership now. And it's really what I kind of think of it now is that everyone can be a leader, and that your own personality traits can be shaped into a leader if you're willing to focus on those types of things. So I think it's more about what they don't say about leaders, or what's what you don't think about naturally.
I hope that Lori is clapping right now, because that was phenomenal. That was like a rhetoric segment of the SLI values. That's
absolutely
awesome.
You know, I thought what was interesting about that is that it feels very empowering ultimately. And on that list, I think the thing that I was most interested in was the fact that like striving for knowledge was on the list, like being educated and not just like book smart, but just like striving for excellence, you know, also being on there. I thought that was really an interesting specification.
I think they all play off of each other too. So striving for knowledge, trying to be educated, but not book smart, like you're saying. Right. Book smart, yes, book smart, definitely. But assuming you already are book smarter, mm-hmm. you're willing to try to be book right. smart. So taking seriously the perspective of others, that plays with being knowledgeable too, because right. the more you learn about other people, the more you really understand the world. So I think they all kind of play with each other yeah. a little bit.
And also think about the fact that by saying that one of the main, you know, factors of being a leader is you have to strive to learn more, which is saying that like, just because you're a leader, that means you have to acknowledge that you don't know everything mm-hmm. and there's always more for you to learn, and you have to be in a position
you can't be complacent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have to be in a position of acknowledging that you have to learn from others in order to lead. And I think that's really, really underrated in like the general, I guess, like popular culture ideas of leadership.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing is, so one of the things I think about, especially hearing you say that, is a great basketball coach. So Coach K at Duke,
right.
one of the best coaches of all time. He is getting better at coaching every year because of the players that he coaches mm-hmm. and being a good leader, how he leads. I think he probably excels at all five of these traits. But literally he's getting better every year mm-hmm. if he's doing these types of things. And that's you're already great at something and you can make yourself better right. by just leading people. The right. people you're leading can make you better at leading. So
I mean, that's like obviously a good example, but do you have any like personal experiences of good leadership that you can tell us about?
Yeah. And I think to go back to my experience as the Edge intern, one of the things they allowed us to do is our responsibilities kind of got cranked up as the year went on. And by spring quarter, they basically were like, hey, here's a project. It's very open-ended. Basically, we want you guys to host an event. It was 100% run by the Edge team, organized, planned, and then operated by us. We're going to help you minimally. And by the end of the quarter, we want you to have some sort of event that promotes our office in some way or talks about socially responsible leadership in some way. And it just kind of fell into our laps, and it was like, do it and impress us. And so I was one of the logistics people. So kind of the functioning of the event more so than like advertising, getting people there, but getting food, getting people to speak.
What was the event?
So we ended up doing a TED Talk style type of thing. Cool. I think we called it like Demon Talks or something.
Love it. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Basically what we did is we reached out to presidents of clubs or people that we knew that had professional or like personal experiences with leadership. Mm-hmm. And we said, hey, here is socially responsible leadership. If you didn't know about it already. And do you think that your experience kind of relates to this? And just come talk and tell us a story. And
that's awesome.
It was really awesome. We got Chipotle to cater it.
I remember you telling me about this. Yeah.
It was one of the things, because whoever writes the contracts for Chartwells is a genius, because if you have an event at any of DePaul's buildings and you want to spend more than $100 on food, it has to be through Chartwells.
Yeah.
So we ended up finangling it. I really like that word, finangle. we finangled it, and we reached out to Chipotle's campus representative and had them donate the burritos.
So if it's free, then you don't have to use Chartwells.
That's the workaround. Yeah. That's the workaround.
That's awesome.
So that was kind of the things we did, is that, and that was what I was in charge of food. That was my main thing, and getting the people to speak. And then I emceed the event, and it was really rewarding, because to have my bosses, if you will, they didn't ever really feel like bosses there, but to have my bosses kind of come up to me at the end and say, like, thank you. Like that was special. That was important. That was so rewarding. And it was because of those types of leadership traits that we were able, and it was all of us working together with those leadership traits that we were able to function.
Consider the fact that you said, you know, bosses, and then you used air quotes, like they didn't even feel like bosses to you. In some ways, like, that's what makes a good leader, is someone that you respect and you can respond to them, but they never feel like they're working above you, and you don't feel like belittled by them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also noticed in that whole the explanation of that event is how much being a leader is part of being a team. Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, how rarely is there one individual leader rather than like a team of leaders?
Absolutely.
And so it just becomes so important to be able to work with people. Well,
and I think in a situation like that, people naturally stick out. People have more time than other people in a situation like that, or people just have other priorities. And so people kind of naturally stick out as like, okay, he's leading this, but it was a group effort and it is working in a team. And I think that's a very good point. So.
Yeah. And I was thinking about, kind of relating this back to Scrawl, like, you know, on our Scrawl team, and thinking about our experiences with Kevin and Megan and everyone else who's been on the show, technically, Brandon, like, you're the manager of our team. You're
that's
the DA.
Right.
You're the, that's right. Write it down. Write it down twice.
And don't you forget it.
But you're working on this team has been so wonderful, because I never feel like Brandon has to like demand that I do something. And we all feel like equals, but you know, you're in the technical leadership position, but I would never consider you my boss. Like, you don't look down on me. And
I am, though.
I mean, don't get that twisted.
Well, even more so than just this team, which I'm just kind of seeing for the first time today, how it operates, but the writing center in general.
Absolutely.
I think that point I had about at SLI, my bosses, I think that kind of works the same way for the writing center. Is think of like Lori and Matthew and Katie, like, do they even feel like bosses, that your superiors, or do they feel like your coworkers who are really there to support you and help you along the way?
Yeah. So, I mean, that was a good transition into saying like the things that you learned at SLI, how did you apply those to your writing center experience this year?
It is kind of weird, because I'm a new Aquabler this year, and I was I would say I didn't do it well enough, if that's a good way. I didn't apply it good enough. I think in hindsight, I would have tried a little bit better. I was so shy coming in, and I broke out of that pretty quickly, because I'm naturally not a shy person. But there's so many people who work at the Writing Center.
It is very overwhelming.
Most of them were returning, and everyone at orientation had these inside jokes, and everyone was laughing. I can remember Brandon specifically sticking out at orientation. Being
Brandon
like,
with inside jokes? Never.
What?
That's not a real movie. No way.
And I think it comes more into play when you start doing appointments with people. I think one of the traits that sticks out to me most is taking seriously the perspective of others. And I think that comes into play every appointment that I have. And so maybe if I'm having a bad appointment, or if I'm getting frustrated or something, I step back and I think about where the writer is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe they don't like this class. Maybe they're a computer science major in WRD and they have no idea what they're doing, and they're nervous, and they're nervous to even be in the writing center. And to me, that seems so foreign, because I work there and I love writing, and it's one of my favorite places to be, but not everybody does. And so you have to, you have to take that perspective and understand where people are coming from.
I mean, what? The Uncle Bowl isn't everyone's favorite place on campus? What?
It'll get there for them.
Well, you come in once and right. It changes.
Well, you know, and I even thought, like, something you said just reminded me about how it really is like a tiny little act of courage for someone to make writing absolutely. Center appointment, to like share that something so personal, even if it's not like a personal essay, to like people's, I think for whatever reason, writing feels very personal to people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And so
it is for me, for sure.
Absolutely.
Anything that I love to show people my writing when it's like an essay about
something fascinating. Yeah.
Something like right. that. But anytime I do some sort of narrative based writing, some sort of story about my life, someone asks me if they can read it. I'm like, I don't know.
Maybe. I'll think about it.
Right.
Well, I know even in my tutoring philosophy, I talked about how like staring at a blank white page is so intimidating because every single thing that you put on there, like you created from nothing. You put it all was in your head and then you chose exactly which words to use and you put that on the paper. And to bring that to a stranger and be like, tell me your opinion. I'm literally just asking for you to tell me what you think and if this makes sense is very, very overwhelming. And I know even when I make appointments with other writing tutors, which I do often, I'm realizing that even in the description, I tend to write like, hey, you know, like I feel like I have to give an explanation of why I'm giving them my paper.
Absolutely.
There's always an intimidation factor there.
And so really part of like being an excellent leader is giving comfort to people in those situations. So that perspective you talked about, like remembering where they come from, I think is absolutely a part of that process.
Definitely. I would say the more you can not feel like someone's superior or feel like they're looking at you as a leader, if they're looking at you on more of an equal level, I think that can be a really interesting way to lead people. So.
For sure. So let's, hypothetically speaking, you have been asked to lead a group, like who, like regardless of what the nature of that group is, what are your first thoughts? Like, how do you get organized? How do you get going? What do you think?
I think the first thing I want to do is get to know everyone. I want to know why you're here, what if you have to be or if you don't have to be, why you've chosen to be here. But also more on a personal level, people's names, where they're from, what their majors are, what they're doing, why they're, what they like to do. And that way I kind of, it's a perspective of others thing. I really like to understand why people are doing what they're doing. And I think that's the first step, is making sure everyone's comfortable with each other. Mm-hmm. Not that you don't have to be friends to work in a group effectively. You don't even have to like each other, but feeling comfortable in that group, feeling like you know everyone and you kind of have a trust in that group, is important. And then I think that building trust would be the next step, is that if they're looking at me as the leader, I want to make sure they know that I am capable of leading and they can trust me and I'm reliable. And there's a lot of ways you can do that. I think mostly just kind of showing it through your actions and being that dependable person builds that trust over time.
One of the things I take away from that is that ultimately what you're doing as a leader is you're making sure the members of your team know that you care about them. Mm-hmm. You're interested in them. You're interested in their background, their goals, and you care about that and you care about helping them get, you know, to where they want to go. Like when I was teaching, that was one of the big things that I always tried to do in my classroom, was I just tried to like make sure my students knew that I cared about their personal lives. Like, you know, like not like I want to know about who they're dating. Like, in fact, I rarely wanted to know about that.
Right.
But just like, you know, like how they were feeling that day or whatever, like where they're from and, you know, what they care about. Like, those are things that I want them to know.
I think if you look back, that teaching is such a great example of that, that I think if you look back through your educational history, is that the right word to say?
Yeah, sure.
The people who stick out to you as the best teachers that you had or the best professors that you have are those people that made you feel like they cared. And so you don't remember the teachers that you have in a 150 person lecture who you never even spoke to face to face, but you do remember your 15 person class where your teacher said, tell me what you want to learn and I'll shape this class so that you get something out of it. And those are the people that stick out to me. And I think about professors and teachers that I still have contact with.
Right.
I have teachers from high school in my phone that I talk to frequently. Right. And it's the people that sat down and they were like, okay, you seem like you're having a bad day. Tell me about it. What I care about you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, also going off of that, from a classroom setting and in the hypothetical scenario where if we said, you know, when you're leading a group, what would you do? How does, or I guess in your opinion, how does body language play into that? You know, think about these classroom settings in my head. And when I'm thinking of the classrooms where I really was comfortable with my professors and I built a relationship with them, most of the time we sat in a circle and it was very equal playing field. It wasn't like the professor stood and we were all sitting and facing them. Most of those situations, especially at DePaul, was always in a circle. So can you speak a little bit to like whether or not you consider body language when you're leading a group?
Well, I think it's huge because it doesn't matter what you're saying, what the words you're saying are, if your body is saying the opposite of that. If you, your body can, it doesn't matter what you're saying, is if your body can scream that I'm uninterested, if I'm sitting down the whole class slouched over or something like that. I mean, that's so obviously a bad thing. And it's so obvious that you are not interested, that whatever's coming out of your mouth doesn't matter. And I think that it's almost, I kind of automatically take that into account. It's hard to even answer that question because it's just kind of automatically in my mind, I'm thinking about that. I think body language is, when you're talking, is almost half of the battle, is that your body language is speaking for you. And I know
you said that that happens like very naturally. And often people do say like, you know, I'm like, leaders tend to be natural leaders. Do you think that someone can learn how to be a leader?
Absolutely. And I think reflecting on my experience at the Student Leadership Institute is that that's 100% what my takeaway is that anyone can learn to be a leader. There are natural leaders. There are people who don't need to learn, just like there are naturally good writers and people who are naturally good at math. But
what's that like? Sorry, go on.
But I'm a firm believer that you can learn to do anything that you want to learn to do. But leading is definitely one of those things. And I think that people automatically say, they look at themselves and they think about their personality traits. Maybe I'm an introvert or something like that. They just immediately go, I'm not a leader. I'll be the follower and I'll be content with following. And that's cool. If you're content with whatever you're doing, that's fine. But if you do want to lead, if you want to be a leader, if you want to be someone that people look at and say, that's a great leader, you can. And you can use any of your who you are, any of your personality traits, you can build yourself into a leader.
That reminds me of how people feel about writing too. People just feel like, oh, I'm not a good writer. And then, you know, the just because you feel like you aren't a good leader or you aren't a good writer doesn't mean you can't improve those skills and have some like ideas to, you know, to work with. There might be scenarios where it will be really helpful for you to have a few leadership skills to pull out, or just like you might have some good writing skills that like, I might not be great at this, but I know if I do A, B, and C, I'm going to be all right. And that kind of thing. That's an interesting parallel.
Well, I think people, like I was saying earlier, people naturally kind of assign charismatic, loud, extrovert, those types of things to good leaders. But if you look around, some of the best leaders aren't those things. Some of the best leaders are those things. I think of like a Malcolm X as that, but a Gandhi is a very quiet man who doesn't kind of have those traits. So I think that if you look around, it's actually not like that as often as people think.